You're listening to Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken on the Tangent Bound Network.
Do not adjust your settings. Take your hands off the keys. Your search is over. These are the geeks you're looking for. You found Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken.
This is going to be quite a ride.
Hey, Jim, boom! That's a bad outfit. Boom!
I love you.
Me too, man. Hit me, my turn! Am I the meanest?
Sure enough.
Am I the prettiest?
Sure enough.
Am I the baddest mofo no down around this town?
Sure enough.
Well, who am I?
Sure enough.
The Shogun of Harlem.
For what lies ahead, ready are you?
We're police officers. We're not trained to handle this kind of violence.
Hey, geeksters. I'm Kylan.
And I'm Ken.
And you found Geek Watch 1.
Welcome back, Geeksters, issue 84 of Geek Watch 1. And we all saw another movie.
Surprise, surprise!
Wait. Let's just say, not we all. We all as a geek community, because I think just about everybody who enjoys Star Wars has seen Rogue One at this point.
At this point, I would think so.
I'm pretty sure.
Or at least by this coming Thursday.
Yeah, by Wednesday when this comes out, they will have. So,
at least once.
Well, this is, as always, this is your spoiler alert. We are going to spoil the mess out of this thing.
Yeah, so just,
not that you don't already know what the whole plot of the movie is, but...
Well, the thing is, the plot, everybody knows the plot of this movie.
Yeah.
It was detailed in two sentences back in 1977.
That's right.
But
that part's not a spoiler, if you don't know by now.
There is all kinds of other stuff that was in this movie that are major spoilers.
Yeah.
Major spoilers for this movie.
Yeah,
they, true. So if you've not seen it, hit pause, go see it, and listen to this.
in about 10, 15 minutes, hit pause.
That's right. Like I said, we're on issue 84. What have you guys been doing this week? And now that we're actually done with all the oddballs and Con of the Cops and relaxing finally.
Number one, recovering from oddball. And aside from seeing the movie, it was trying to deal with the weather and the slam that Cleveland got.
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's not as bad as, I guess, Boston yesterday on Sunday.
Yeah.
Or Saturday. Derek from Wookiee Radio was supposed to go see Rogue One yesterday, couldn't get out of his house.
Oh. Well, there were some areas, like, even when Cleveland got a lot of snow this past week, Buffalo got it even worse.
Yeah. Well, Buffalo
and
always gets
Michigan
it worse.
Michigan got it worse. Like, it was because it was a big lake effect sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So whatever was going across Lake Erie, everything got it, and... Down here in Akron, we didn't get it too bad, although it did get super cold. But
yeah.
I actually, on Thursday, when I was seeing the traffic reports and such, first thing in the morning, and the entire traffic map was all red, and things on the freeway were going maybe 10 miles an hour if you were lucky.
Oh, lovely.
It was, I'm staying home today. That's how Thursday went for me. And I found out that I have coworkers who live barely a 10 to 15 minute drive from the office who took 2 to 3 hours to get into the office.
Wow.
And I was like, no, it's not worth it. Just stay home.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, Chris, our brother-in-law, got two vehicles stuck in the driveway.
Yeah.
They got 20 inches.
Well, oh yeah, he's they're out in Montana. That's
where
there
you go. Yeah.
So yeah, it comes off the top of the Rockies and drops.
Yeah. Sometimes it misses them, but
yeah.
It didn't miss them. And
that was most of what everyone was dealing with this week was weather.
Oh yeah.
More than anything.
What's worse, the snow isn't that bad. The snow gets bad.
Yeah.
But in Ohio, the snow will get 6 to 8 inches at the most.
Yeah.
Whereas you were talking about Buffalo, like if we get 6 inches, they get 6 feet.
Right.
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 But no, what's worse is here. Friday, it was 28 degrees outside for a high.
Yeah.
Right.
Lows in the lower teens.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, it's 54 or 45 degrees and rain.
Yeah.
Right.
And then Sunday, today, it's back to 23 degrees.
Yeah, and so everything's
and
icy.
Ice.
Yeah, and everything's right. Solid. I mean, that. I wish it would make up its mind.
It's Ohio. It never will.
It's craziness.
Yeah, I mean, and it's still fall technically, so...
For another couple days.
Technically another couple days until winter,
right.
So yeah.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing is, I wouldn't trade it, because Ohio, we're cold.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't get super, super cold.
Right.
No.
And in the summer, it gets hot, but it doesn't get super, super hot.
Right.
And it's interesting. You can always, if nothing else about Ohio weather, you can say it's interesting.
There is that.
It is not a boring state of weather.
The one thing I did do on Saturday was we had our Rubber City Book Posse meeting, and we were talking about the upcoming reading festival in Akron. It's in February, and it's the weekend before Oddmall. So we've got two things in a row. The first weekend in February, we have the reading festival, family reading festival in Akron at the main library.
So we have two events that day, I think. I got to double check.
And it will be giving away our book posse gives away around 1,000 books or so, but it's family related, and they usually have mascots and something from PBS. We've had Minions there. There's been Curious George. There's been all sorts of characters and stuff there. And then the following weekend is when we have Oddmall Dreamscapes Con. That's what it's called, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
And that's down in Canton again, and it's in conjunction with the Canton Museum of Art.
Mm-hmm.
As a bit of a fundraiser, so there's a $5 entrance fee, and we'll all be there again, and there will actually be panels and gaming this time.
Right.
Yes.
So, and Kylan's working on some panel ideas, and knowing who's going to be at the show, that's who's going to populate the panels.
Yes. Well, I know, right as soon as the turn of the first of the year, Mike and I are going to sit down with Andy and get the entertainment schedule locked out.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, what date is that?
Whatever the weekend before Oddmall is.
The 4th, I believe?
Because Groundhog Day is actually the 27th to the 29th of January.
So yeah, last year it was the end of January. Yeah, the reading festival is February 4th. Oddmall is February 11th and 12th.
We have events 3 weeks in a row.
So Groundhog Day is the 28th and 29th of January.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be a busy 3 weeks. We'll have the Malted Meeple the day after
Groundhog Day. Malted Meeple will be the 30th of January. Yep. Both the 2nd of January and the 30th of January.
We are some busy peoples.
Yes.
And you thought we were relaxing on the con of the cobs.
Yeah, I knew better.
Yeah.
We're popular gamers about town and geeks. Everybody wants us to come around and hang out.
Apparently.
So, but we'll give you more information on Groundhog Day as it comes. I got to talk to Drew and get what releases he wants to actually talk about. I know Vicky and I will be there. You guys said you're going to try to make it at some point there too, aren't you?
Yeah, it just depends on work schedules and such. Mm-hmm.
So, but Groundhog Day is the 20, what did I just say?
End of January.
Yeah, last weekend of January at the Clarion Inn where we used to do Oddmall and Con of the Cob.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a great starter hotel.
It is.
Once you eventually outgrow it and move on.
Yep, that's right.
But that's fine. So, that's basically what's coming up. The next thing on the Geek Watch 1 event schedule, though, remember, is January 2nd. That's our year-end, year-beginning show at the Malted Meeple.
Right.
Actually, next week's show is going to be a special show for Geek Watch 1.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
We're meeting up this week with Weeby Geeks podcast, which, like we do every year, for the Weeby Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Mike already has all the votes. They're all tallied. He knows who won.
Yes, he does.
Yep.
We have no idea.
But we'll be talking about it.
He did say the way he did the voting this year was a whole lot easier and a lot nicer, and it was nice and streamlined. Mm-hmm. I thought the way the nomination process and everything else was really easy to do.
Yeah.
He
did, yeah.
I mean, it was nice and simple. It took you about 10 minutes to fill out the nominations because you got to do some thinking.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the voting was like 2 minutes, you're done.
So we'll be talking about basically our favorite movies of the year, comics, TV shows, all that kind of stuff. So
the nominations for TV shows was difficult because it's like, when you're talking like new shows and everything else, is like, does Netflix fit in with regular TV, or is it separate, or it's weird?
I just consider it all TV shows.
Yeah,
That's the way we did it.
Right. Yep.
So, but that's going to be for the next week's episode here. So the next two episodes after this are going to be special episodes, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But that's fine because that's the holidays.
Right.
So,
but don't worry, they're not depressing, like, after-school special, very special episodes. Don't worry about that.
No, we're still working on one of those.
It's our own version of very special episodes.
Kylan, we're going to have to write up a script for something like
that. Oh, no. We'll have dramatic music and everything.
Yes, we'll do dramatic music. We'll do it, but we'll do our spin on it, so it won't be all that depressing, obviously.
And Andy will have to be involved.
Try to keep him out of it.
That's right.
Why are you using cheat codes on a video game? I learned it from watching you! Yeah, I'm just saying.
Maybe we'll work on that all next year, and that'll be our Christmas episode for next year. We'll write up a holiday switch.
Very special Christmas.
Oh, that's just wrong. Vicky got me again.
Well, technically, they started it.
Yeah.
Just saying.
So the Tusken village, the entire village, deserved what it got from Anakin.
There it did. Go. Yeah, it did. It did.
They started it!
The entire village, not just the guys who
the destruction of everything because they started it.
Yeah. Well, so you could tell who did it, so he just figured they all never, did it.
I'm sorry, Tusken
That's
Raiders...
That's profiling!
There's not... Tusken Raiders generally do not have a peaceful...
Again, profiling.
That's not profiling.
You're just saying one of them did it, so they all did it.
You're not going to win this battle.
You know what? I put it like this. It's sort of like... All right, it's like... well, see, no, because...
So you're going to try, and it's not going to work already. So
the thing is, you got... How many years...
Sith.
How many years have you guys been together?
17 years.
Okay, 17, you got 17 years of realizing that you can't win an argument with her.
I've won a couple.
I let you win a couple.
I
gotta make him feel good sometimes, you know.
I just know when to shut up. So
yeah, you never ever argue with a lawyer. They're paid to argue.
Yeah,
that is basically your job. Interpret the law and argue your point of view.
Lawyers
do. Yeah, she can. I'm just like you. I just don't even. I just okay, but never mind.
Before we get into Star Wars too deep, we actually have a couple of news stories.
We do have a couple. A couple of quickies that I had. The first was that Black Panther is going to be kicking off production January 15th in Atlanta. They're using a studio there for their home base.
Okay.
And it releases essentially a year later, just about, like in February of 2018. So, not surprisingly, it's going to have, you know, some effects and stuff. But given what Black Panther does, it might not have quite as many.
Yeah, it seems like it'll be more physical effects.
Well, isn't it? Yeah.
Because it doesn't have... Black Panther doesn't have a lot in the way of magic or anything like that.
And they haven't said all the characters who will be in it yet. I mean, there's obviously a chance that Bucky might be because he's in Wakanda.
Yeah.
Frozen somewhere.
Well, you know Captain America's going to be in it.
Cap's going to show up, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's going to start filming January 15th.
Oh, speaking of Cap.
Uh-oh.
Did you hear about Netflix? Civil War comes to Netflix on Christmas Day.
Yep.
There you go.
It just popped in my head when he said
Captain
America. For
those of you few who don't actually own it anyway.
Mm-hmm. or seen it.
Yeah.
The other bit of filming I had, which actually applies to our upcoming story for this episode, Kathleen Kennedy from Lucasfilm, as we all know, and I'm sure you know already, she basically said that Han Solo is going to start shooting in February.
Okay. That looks like it was happening anyway because we've been getting the casting announcements.
Right. They're pretty much set on
we speculated on this
that.
Even.
And they said you're not going to end up seeing any kind of footage or trailer for episode 8 until the spring.
Yeah, so it's going to be Celebration.
Yeah, it's not surprising. They said, like the last trailer and everything came out much earlier before the movie, but because of Rogue One, they want to give it its time. And they're not going to show anything about it for months down the line. So, which that's not surprising. And I mean, everyone knows that the next movie comes out in a year anyway. So
yeah, the two options are going to be either it'll release that they may go a different option and release it on the Blu-ray and DVD for Rogue One.
I don't think so.
I don't think they will, but that's an option. But more than likely,
what's the next Marvel movie that comes out? It might be in front of that movie.
More than likely, what it's going to be is they'll release it. They'll do an early. They may show early showing of something at Celebration, which is early. Which
Celebration
is in spring.
Is in April. Isn't
no,
it?
Yeah, it's the Easter weekend in April.
Yep.
And then it'll be within the week after that they'll release the actual trailer.
That's true. I could see that happen, and they could do it before Guardians because if you think about it, they did. The official in-movie release for Spider-Man Homecoming was before Rogue One.
Right. Yeah.
So, they're working with the Marvel movie.
Actually, you just made me remember something.
Okay.
You remember, I guess somewhere towards around a year ago, there was talk about the Damage Control TV series.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, we hadn't really heard anything about it, right? So, I mean...
You got the DC knockoff.
Well, yeah, you got the DC knockoff, but they never talk about.
You see, they changed the premise of that though.
Mm-hmm.
Just slight changes, but it's still.
So what's happening is, based on some of the, pictures, behind the scenes stuff that they've seen in Spider-Man Homecoming, they're thinking that Damage Control may be introduced in Homecoming.
Okay.
Okay, that'd be kind of cool.
And if that's the case, then. we may see it spin off into
that would be a TV actually series. Spider-Man would be a good place to put it because it's not quite as heavy and serious
right.
as yeah. some of the other characters.
Also, right. Spider-Man, he's like the bridge between the street-level heroes and the big heroes.
Yeah.
Right.
And damage control would be something that street-level guys would have to deal with.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
I
they're
mean,
cleaning up for the Avengers and the guys that are doing galactic right. battles and worldwide battles,
mm-hmm.
but they're not dealing with those characters. They'd be right. dealing with the street-level heroes.
Well, I mean, it was already mentioned, was it last season or the season before, on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Mm-hmm.
There was a brief one-liner about, oh, don't worry, damage control will take care of it.
Right.
As they walked away from one of the houses, it was What's-His-Face's... family house that was totally destroyed.
Yeah, when
Mac went to see his brother.
And the watchdogs attacked.
Yeah,
yes.
And they attacked the house, and Daisy said, don't worry, damage control will take care of it.
Right.
That was like the one-liner. And so it's already kind of in there, but Spider-Man would be a good place for it.
Yeah. But, well, like I mentioned, they made the change to, did you guys both see the change to Powerless?
No, what was the change?
No longer, they're not an insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually work for the research and development Department of Wayne Security.
Yeah.
So they're actually tying it into the Batman mythos.
Right.
And what it is they're developing gadgets and tech for regular humans having to deal with the superpowered world.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
So they
decided to separate themselves from Marvel more, going yeah. like, no, we're not quite copying you.
Well, I think what it is they actually already had a pilot. I think yeah. what someone at the network looked at it and said, you know what, this isn't quite what we want quite right. yet. It was there.
Right.
But it wasn't exactly. So they do a couple little tweaks, and now they're going to be happy with it, obviously, because mm-hmm. February 2nd, we're getting it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's coming whether we like it or not.
So, and I was reminded this week, I forgot that, I guess Black Lightning is still a viable thing at Fox. Greg Berlanti mm-hmm. is still developing Black Lightning.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it looks like, as of right now, in the fall, we're going to get, or that's the earliest we're going to get. They ordered a pilot almost a year ago.
So
they should be real close to actually having
will
that
Will
he
still have his close ties to Kent State like he does in the comics?
I don't know.
Because that's one of the things I really liked about him, because it kind of hit a little...
Well, Black Lightning's a local boy. I mean, he yeah. was created by a local guy, so... Mm-hmm.
Right, you know, and I was like, well, you know, I think that would be cool to kind of give that little bit of a spin, because so much of DC feels outside of this reality, and at least Kent State is this world.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, it's like in Russell.
Well, partly, though, it would depend if they could get the rights from Kent State to use their name.
Right. I think they would have no problem with that on a TV series, because,
right.
hey, look, that's more advertising.
Right.
How much do schools put into advertising already?
Exactly.
That's true.
This yeah. is free publicity.
Right.
So, but, no, that's like every time the wrestling is the same way, because Dolph Ziggler in the WWE was a wrestler at Kent State. He grew up around here.
Mm-hmm.
And they mentioned it all the time on TV. It's like, hey, I know that. It makes it feel like it's part of home.
Yeah.
Right.
There you go.
And he was actually a nationally ranked wrestler. He was one of the top wrestlers that came out of Kent State ever. Mm-hmm. So, cool. And they actually, I think last year they put him into the Kent State Athletic Hall of Fame or something like that.
Oh, right. Okay, cool.
So, but what else did you have on?
The other thing we had was a couple of Wonder Woman stories.
Yeah.
Neither one of them was good news.
No.
The biggest one was that, you know, barely a few weeks ago, Wonder Woman was given the status as a UN ambassador.
Yes.
To kind of, the UN has a program to encourage, women in various professions and just in kind of positions of power around the world and just encourage their education and that kind of thing. And so they brought in Wonder Woman kind of as the ambassador for that, and to represent a strong, powerful woman. And she was stripped of that. There was a protest by UN staff, actually. They had they signed some stuff, and they went for a protest. Actually,
yeah, they had 45,000 signatures.
Apparently, during the ceremony, they were actually protesting, which I never saw anything about yeah. at the time, which, of course, they're not going to try and put in the news, but... apparently,
which is weird. Usually,
then,
that's the type of stuff that gets front page news,
right? even then, they were protesting, and then after the fact, and ridiculously, the main point was about her costume.
Well, yeah, the way I read it was they were protesting the fact that they don't see Wonder Woman as a positive role model for young women because of her over sexualization.
What? Right.
That's almost a direct quote. I mean, I don't know exactly, but
well,
that's basically what it is.
Part of the issue is the fact that being with the UN, it's global.
Right.
And not all cultures are accepting of the superhero costume yeah. and appearances and that kind of thing, which to some degree is understandable, but when you look at the character herself,
yeah,
it's a little ridiculous.
Like I said, you can tell these are the people that have never read Wonder Woman ever.
Right.
Right.
They don't know anything about the character.
Right.
They say, oh, this is a lady wearing a bathing suit.
And I mean, really, if someone at the UN kind of should have thought about this, being as global as it is, and maybe presented Wonder Woman in one of her fuller outfits.
Yeah.
You know, she's got plenty of outfits that cover mm-hmm. more. And interestingly, even after the fact, there's another a counter protest. A petition was started by a 14-year-old mm-hmm. to say, no, we want Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
We want her as the ambassador, and we want her back, and we don't think this is right.
The way it feels, the way I've read two or three stories, and it seems like the people that are doing this are the same people that feel that, like, if a woman is not wearing an ankle-length dress and long sleeves, she's flaunting herself.
Right.
This is the type of people the way the articles read, that's the type of people that are doing this. And it's the same type of people that, a couple of guys at work read some of the feminist blogs and stuff just because it's funny, some of the stuff they have in there.
Right.
They have some of these ladies, and maybe men too, have the mindset that, like, if a man looks at a woman in a way that she feels is inappropriate, mm-hmm. he might as well have just raped her.
Right, yeah.
It's like, huh?
You said something about the glance, that they looked at him a little too long.
Yeah, if she feels you looked at her too long, you violated her.
And, I mean, some of this is not because they think, you know, it's necessarily she's too scantily clad or something. They're looking at it as a matter of respect, mm-hmm. and they're thinking that women dressed like that aren't going to exude the amount of respect they think that sort of position should have. And I honestly wonder if it's more the fact that it's a comic book creation that bothers a lot of people than the fact of just what she's wearing.
Well, the thing is, the same people are talking about how equality. But when it comes to comic books, and Jesse actually brought this mm-hmm. up when we were talking this with her, that if you look at men in comic books, men are always overly muscled, wearing sometimes even less than the women.
Yeah.
And no one speaks up about that at all.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly.
That's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean, look at Conan.
That's, how's that equality? You know what I mean?
Right.
If it's equal, it should be equal.
Right.
I mean,
let's say look at Conan. He wears even less than most of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's fine if it's maybe appropriate to the story, but if you're looking at, like, Conan or one of the, like, they're just consistently shirtless and hugely muscled, mm-hmm. and it's like, that's protecting you from all these arrows and swords and everything that happened. I don't think so.
No. Conan is so ripped that the swords and the arrows bounce off
of it. But really, if you think about it, there's almost equality in the Conan universe if you look at how Red Sonja's dressed.
Yeah, right, it's true.
You know, so you kind of get that there, but right. but no, like, just
but even looking at Superman and Batman, they're wearing a shirt, but they might as well not be, because it's...
Right.
Yeah, it's...
But, I mean, that comes down to this, too. Like, having Wonder Woman as the ambassador, why can't she be treated equally regardless of what she's wearing?
Exactly.
Being the ambassador has nothing to do with whether you're wearing a bathing suit or a pantsuit or whatever.
Exactly.
And it's more what she represents. And I think that's where the UN was going to begin with, is what she represents. It's the power mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff and the respect. I mean, and then it just fell back on them.
For look at MS Magazine. Mm-hmm. Or Miss Magazine, wherever it is, one of the biggest feminist magazines ever. I mean, mm-hmm. this is the extreme feminist,
right?
And Wonder Woman was on the cover of their first magazine,
mm-hmm.
wearing her actual Wonder Woman clothes.
Right.
I mean, back then she was wearing a skirt, but still,
yeah,
she right. had the corset top and stuff.
Right.
And they had no problem putting that on the cover of their magazine.
But then again, it was also an American magazine.
Yeah. I'm wondering how much of this, the thing is like 45,000 signatures sounds like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go on a global scale,
that's not a lot.
A fraction of a 1% right. of the people that would be.
Right. But I mean, the point of the UN is to kind of keep conflict at a minimum.
The so, point of the UN is to absolutely do nothing.
You know, so it's kind of just like, oops, we made a mistake.
In the last 15 years, I think I personally got to the point where it's like, what does the UN actually do?
Yeah. Yeah. They argue they with talk. Each other, and that's about it.
They talk and argue, and yeah. that's about it.
But the thing is, like, it makes the UN look worse to actually have taken it away like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And try to come up with excuses.
They're
as
bowing
to why
to a very
valid.
Small amount of the
exactly.
population.
It shows that that even a small voice, you know,
yeah.
can do whatever they want.
Well, it's always they say the squeaky wheel. Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. And it, honestly, and it makes you wonder if a couple of people in power at the UN found out about all these signatures and went, no, that's fine, we'll take it away. Like, you know, it was those couple of people in power that no one else wanted to argue with,
uh-huh.
is what it came down to.
Also, this reeks, mainly it reeks of a political decision.
Oh, yeah.
They said, oh, wait, we may lose the votes of these couple people. Mm-hmm.
Well, that was like the same thing that happened with George Lucas's museum.
Yeah,
it
was Lucas Museum had nothing to Chicago,
do with,
same thing.
It had nothing to do with the actual anything.
It's the same thing we've been saying over and over again here, that the internet, if nothing else, has given a very vocal negative minority a very big voice.
Yeah, well, it has, unfortunately.
And it also proves, too, because did you guys hear about the one, the library, I forget the actual state, where the library, they had taken in a kitten, and it was like their library cat. Right. It had been there for years.
Right.
And the one guy in the board wanted to get rid of the cat. Well, needless to say, the cat outlasted him and found out what it was. I don't know if it was a guy or girl. They weren't allowed to bring their dog, their puppy, to the courthouse or whatever it was. The state house. So that was the reason why they wanted to get rid of the cat, because they weren't allowed to do what they wanted to do.
Right.
So that was the reason. Well, needless to say, they no longer are in their position in the cat state.
Right. But
so, we got one more.
The other piece of Wonder Woman news is in the comic realm, and Legend of Wonder Woman was a pretty popular book, Volume 1. It gave a good... It kind of changed a bit of the Wonder Woman story, but it brought the mythos out to a lot of people who didn't necessarily know it, and it was really popular. Mm-hmm. Renee DeLiz reported that Volume 2 was canceled. She worked on it. She worked on the book with her husband, Ray Dillon. It's been canceled 6 months after it was already green-lit and midway through production.
Yeah.
And the thing is, looking into it, like, both the article and DeLiz looked into things, and it wasn't because of sales. It was a relatively popular book. It wasn't like, you know, the Mockingbird case where sales were down, that kind of thing. But because so many people were upset about it, they asked her to create a GoFundMe page so that they could help them with the amount of money they were going to get from it, because... You know, end of year, holidays, and she's pregnant.
Yeah, she's pregnant with her fourth kid.
Yeah, so they were, you know, you're already contracted for this amount of money. You're kind of counting on it. So it was $2,000. They set up the page, and it's almost fully funded anyway. But basically, it was a shock to everyone involved, and a few blogs had this saying that it may have been revenge by DC in a way, because apparently the husband... It wasn't completely trash-talking, but he had talked about the fact that for Volume 1, DC really didn't seem to be giving it much in the way of marketing. And he was wondering why. He basically questioned it, saying that you're giving all these other books this amount of marketing, and you've kind of kept this in the background, and you're not pushing it out there.
If you look at it, though, Legend of Wonder Woman was one of their digital titles, a weekly digital title on Comixology, a 99-cent weekly, which is the same as Bombshells and...
It was print, too, though.
Bombshells, well, yeah, no, well, all of their digital ones, put out, I believe, 6 weeks, and then they put out a trade.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll put out a two or three issues in a comic later.
Right.
They're print after. But if you look on their website and everything else, none of those get any kind of... None of the digital ones get any kind of major marketing.
Right.
Because what it is usually, if most people in Comixology, if you're going to buy... Like, I buy Bombshells... I've had Bombshells since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that story just because it's a nice alternate reality version.
Right.
But most people, if you get your 99-cent weekly, you're on a schedule. You're going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
They'll announce it when there's a new one coming, but then that's all they let it go, because the print ones, it means you have to actually go out and get something.
Right.
The digital, you have it in your hand as soon as it's released.
Well, yeah, but this has a lot more to do with the actual print version, the full Volume 1. And I think he was pointing out the fact of Wonder Woman is one of the big three, and they weren't treating it the same as the other two. They weren't treating it the same as Batman and Superman. And that's what he questioned it. He wasn't basically trashing them about it. He questioned it, and later actually deleted his tweets, but there were still some replies out there that you can tell what they were talking about. So that's what people are wondering, if it came out of that.
Yeah.
Because they actually came up with other things that DC has done. There was Wayne McDuffie. He talked about the ins and outs of writing superhero comics for DC on their message boards, and was then fired off of Justice League of America.
Okay.
John Layman talked about micromanaging of the Authority comic by Paul Levitz. And he was out on that one. And then James Robinson was fired off Superman after a personal issue with the DC executive. And then the lawyers pointed out that the executive couldn't actually fire him for that reason. So, well, I mean, this happens in all industries.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's just DC, but, you know, the fact that they backtracked on this, and it seems a little sketchy. There's probably going to be more coming out about it, but right now it's a little sketchy.
Well, the thing nice with DC is people are slowly starting to notice that DC does also watch social media and what the fans want. Mm-hmm. So the fans start talking enough, and this gets enough buzz, they'll bring it back.
Yeah.
They've done that with other titles.
Yeah, I think a few months down the line, we'll probably see something about it because it's getting far too much. I mean, it's not getting big press. This is the sort of thing that you have to pay attention to the blogs and the sites to actually find this, but it is getting press, and it's bad press that DC wouldn't want. So there'll be something.
Especially with the Wonder... They may... I could actually see them doing... Letting her finish up the Volume 2 run, but not actually releasing it digitally, and just making the trade and dropping the trade.
Yeah, just do a Volume...
Because it just finishes up the story.
If
all
they've already
two
started production on it...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just seems kind of ridiculous that,
and
that they're doing that.
For sales, a lot of comic companies with their digital books... Like, Marvel doesn't have any digital-onlys, do they?
No.
DC, these are technically called digital-only.
Right.
Because they're reprinted as print.
Right.
But... DC, they've done this a couple times, and a couple of the smaller presses, they'll when they're doing the print comics, they'll put out two or three, and then if that's not selling well, they'll just put out the rest of them digital, and you still get the whole run.
Right.
So I can see this eventually getting the finished part
and,
of the run.
And if you think about it, with the Wonder Woman movie coming out, I mean,
they're going to want as much as
they can. They wait a few months down the line until it's closer to the movie coming out, and then release it, they'll get bigger sales.
Right.
So
there you go. That's all I got.
Yeah. Okay, well... That's all the comic books, that's all the other filming. I think we should talk some Star Wars.
And if you haven't seen Rogue One, now is the time to pause.
That's right. Don't delete it, don't stop, just hit pause and go watch a movie. And actually, Derek just sent me an email, he's going at 1:30. So the snow is let up in Boston.
That's right.
But Rogue One, this is a different Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, it is definitely Star Wars.
Yes. Well, yeah.
No matter what, this is in the universe. It feels like Star Wars. It looks like Star Wars. It sounds like Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was loving the Giacchino score. And actually, we bought it when I left the theater. I got it yesterday. It is amazing.
Yeah, don't look for anything original from Williams on this one. He didn't do it.
Not Williams, no. This is the first ever movie... Well, other than the Clone Wars movie, which a lot of people just say, well, that okay,
doesn't
that
count,
was just the,
it's animated.
Yeah. But it was released in theaters, so that's Kevin Kiner. But this is the first ever Star Wars movie in theaters to not have John Williams score.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And he didn't, and Giacchino did not overuse the Williams stuff they did use.
No.
It was in the appropriate places, just right.
It was
right,
noticeable, just a little bit, but you were just like, oh, I recognize that sound.
Mm-hmm. Desplat, who was supposed to do it originally, I've never heard his stuff, but it seems like all of his stuff is really dark, gritty, war movie stuff. Mm-hmm. That I don't know if that would have fit.
Right.
This here, bringing in Giacchino, Michael Giacchino, his inspiration to become a composer was John Williams.
Yeah.
Right. He's a John Williams fanboy.
So it fits.
It's kind of like with Episode 7 when they brought in, what's his name, to direct? And you're not going to help me at all. I'm drawing a blank. J.J. Abrams. They brought in J.J. Abrams. They brought in a guy who basically started making movies because of George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and these people. Well, they've done that now with Michael Giacchino, and the score is amazing.
It is. It's really good.
Oh, yeah. Well, and he's proven he can do a Williams style before because he did the last Jurassic Park movie, Jurassic World.
Okay.
And he did the same thing where he peppered in a little bit of the John Williams stuff from the originals so it still fits in and it still feels like it's part of the same world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know who Michael Giacchino is, all the new Star Trek scores were Giacchino.
Okay.
About half the Marvel movies are Giacchino.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, basically, if any movie we've talked about on here, he's done probably, he may have been the guy who did the score for it.
Right.
I didn't mean to start this off talking about the score, but I was...
It's an
dying.
Important part of the movie.
The weird thing is,
it tells the story.
Well, that's part of what makes it feel like Star Wars. Although the first, the very beginning, when they show the, what did you guys think of not having a crawler?
It didn't bother me. I liked it.
I liked that they used part of it. They used the whole long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Right.
But
They even said that there was a lot of discussion beforehand on whether they would or not.
Mm-hmm.
And because they do want it to be seen as slightly outside of the sets of trilogies, they didn't want to make it part of it in that way.
Right.
Okay.
And they didn't... Because, I mean, you just have to basically recap Episode 3 to get into it. I mean, you know. But that's why they decided to do it. Because these are to be treated as separate movies. So, like, you won't see it with the Han Solo movie either.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Well, also, there's a lot of rumors that, like, the Han Solo movie may not be called a Star Wars story.
Right.
It was one of those that a lot of people feel that they put that on there so that people do realize that this is part of the Star Wars universe.
Right.
Whereas if you do a movie called Han Solo, people know where you're at.
Right.
There's only one place you're going to find Han Solo.
Exactly. Where Rogue One could have been anything.
Yep.
True.
So this was just to say that it is part of the Star Wars universe. Now, I read Catalyst. You guys haven't got a chance to... Dude, that book was phenomenal. It basically brings you up to about a year before the movie starts.
Okay. Right.
And it's basically the backstory of how Galen Erso, in the movie, he's the one that creates the super laser. Mm-hmm. That's not what he was doing when he first started.
Right.
He was studying crystals. He's a crystal, I don't know what you would call it, but
he works with crystals. A crystallologist.
Something like that. But he was working on renewable energy to help developing planets move ahead.
Yeah. Right.
And Orson Krennic, who we see in here, Director Krennic, was actually the guy that was working on weaponizing it, because the idea of the Death Star... we see in the prequel trilogy that the Separatists were already working on this. Mm-hmm. This was a plan they already had.
Right.
Well, what it is the Republic or the Empire says, "Oh, well, we can use this for us now." Because after the Battle of Geonosis, they actually got the plans for it already.
Right.
And they said, "Hell, well, the guys are working on a battle station. Let's keep it going." They had everything except for the actual super weapon. They knew that a weapon was supposed to go there. They had no idea what it was.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the whole book of Catalyst is them figuring out what this weapon is, what are we going to be able to do with it.
Right.
And it's basically learning who these characters are. So you don't have to read it for the movie, but it adds to it.
Yeah, if you want more backstory for it. Yeah,
exactly. Sure. And I was telling Derek last night on Wookiee Radio that you can go... that it's a book that doesn't have to be read before the movie or after the movie. You can do it either way, and it still works.
Right.
And you can tell in the movie that they have a history. I mean, that's kind of the point of the way they react to each other and that kind of thing. So for people who are big fans, they're going to want to know more of that history. So that's what you get out of it.
And Star Wars fanboys are going to read the book because it's Star Wars book.
Exactly.
Right. So, but no, that was amazing. And the book actually ends... as Saw Gerrera is taking the Erso family into hiding.
Oh, okay.
And then when we pick it up again, that's why they know Saul and everything else. He's been keeping them supplied and things. But the movie was phenomenal. Where do we want to go from here on it?
And here's the biggest spoiler of all. Everybody dies in the end. There you go. That's
yes.
The whole movie.
at the red carpet premiere, I think it was Gareth Edwards was saying how it's the first, one of the very few movies that they killed everybody on the poster, except for Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it was interesting because there was talk a while ago about whether Disney would let them do it, because it's technically Disney now, and Disney's all about not killing people, and whether they would actually have them all just bite it in the end. And I think that's why this movie was a little not so satisfying to me, because I went in just presuming they were all going to die, and it was more like, okay, what order are they kicking it in? Like, that's all it came down to for me. You know they're going to get the plans, so there was no sense of danger about that.
Right.
She wasn't going to fall. She had the freaking plans. And then it was just kind of like, who's dying in what order?
Yeah. Right. There were some...
Which it puts more emphasis on New Hope. Makes it more of a...
Yeah, yeah. It does make it much more of a hope sort of thing.
Exactly.
New Hope, because that's, a couple hours in between.
Yeah, there's only hours.
Yeah, they presumably, said it could actually just be minutes from the time he got off the
Presumably,
one the
that's where the Tantive IV actually goes after, as soon as it jumps out. It ends up in Tatooine.
Yep.
Right.
So, but there were some major, huge technological advances in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
One of the facts that everybody figured Tarkin was going to be in here somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
You're talking about the Death Star. He's in charge of the Death Star. No one realized he's actually a major character in this. He's actually a major part of the plot. He's in multiple scenes, and he looked good. Now, you know it's CG.
Yep. Yeah.
And he didn't look exactly like Peter Cushing.
Right.
But for a CG character in this, that's one thing Lucas was always known for. Is in the prequels, one of the things he did do well was the almost seamless integration of CG and reality.
Yeah.
Well, they've done it here too, except they're doing actual actors that lived. Now, the one I thought was better, that was an even closer rendition, was Leia in the end.
Right.
A young Carrie
Fisher.
I didn't
like either one. I will go with that. First, they did have an actor playing the roles.
Yes.
And it was basically overlaying the faces is what it came down to. For him, he just... Honestly, if you've ever been to the Hall of Presidents at Disney, that's what it looked like. He was like Abe Lincoln from the Hall of Presidents. Like, the mouth movement was weird, and there was no expression in the face.
Yeah.
And he looked animatronic to me the whole time, so it bothered me. It took me out of the movie every time he showed up.
Yeah, but see...
I kept just staring at it.
But see, Tarkin is expressionless. Like, even
there wasn't
a
whole
movie. Like, if you go back...
Well, no. I know the character is.
Right.
But in terms of just being human...
Yeah.
There was nothing in the face.
You got to think also, as the first time they've actually done this on a larger scale,
right?
This was a phenomenal. Imagine where they're going to be able to go from here.
The thing is, though, you compare this to, was it Captain America Civil War, where they had a young version of Robert Downey Jr. That was CGI.
That's just changing details. But that is more, it wasn't a full face overlay. It was adjusting features on the face.
No, I think that was the same sort of overlay they did to make it that much younger.
Okay, because I know in Ant-Man with, what was his name?
Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas, younger.
And if I remember, that looked like basically they just removed some of the wrinkles and stuff to actually age him back down. They didn't take a young Michael Douglas and put it on there.
No. No,
so,
which I mean,
this is all tech that they're working on now. And honestly, the funny thing is,
I liked Leia less because she looked very cartoony. Like she didn't fit with her background, and her face, it was the wrong color, and her eyes were too large and they were slightly lopsided.
I don't see, for the five seconds, I don't see where she got these things closely when they happen.
I thought Leia looked the best out of the two because
it looked just like
Carrie Fisher from that age.
I saw Carrie Fisher from 1977.
Yeah.
That's what I saw. I didn't...
Now, the other ones that were phenomenal, I did not know they were going to do this, is I am so happy now that they did the digital transfers and the cleaning up of episode 4.
Yeah.
Because Red Leader and Gold Leader are in this.
Right, and actually,
they're alternate cuts. They're the same lines that they use in the A New Hope, but it's alternate takes.
It is actual bits from that movie. But it is footage
that was filmed in 77 that has been cleaned up and seamlessly added right into there. Yeah. You could not tell.
Yes.
Yeah. And you do get to see why Luke gets to be Red 5.
Yeah, you do.
Because we lose Red 5.
Red 5's out.
Also, you find out why there's Red Squadron and Gold Squadron are the ones attacking the Death Star, because Blue was destroyed in this.
Mm-hmm. Yes. One of the things, and it's a small thing that bothered me, is that I'm a huge fan of A-Wings. Where were the A-Wings in this? They weren't in
New Hope either.
Yes, they were.
No. They may have been brought into the special edition, but they weren't in the original.
They weren't?
No, A-Wings and B-Wings were both introduced in Return of the Jedi.
I told them they were just in different sections of the galaxy at the time.
Well, you got to think. In A New Hope, the Rebel fleet wasn't there. They took off from Yavin.
Enough of the ships get destroyed, they have to create new ones at some
point. That's right.
Right. So. Right. So. Yeah, okay. So, when they took off, I know when they took off from Yavin 4, that it was just squadrons. But first, now I remember seeing Y-Wings. I knew Y-Wings were there. I knew X-Wings were there for some reason. I was pretty sure A-Wings were there. I don't know what.
A-Wings were in the Battle of Yavin.
Okay.
Or Battle of Endor.
Okay.
There's got to be someone who's got, like, now, a post about this, about tracking where all the ships
are. Oh, yeah. But, well, Vicky, you saw it last night. There was just Y-Wings and X-Wings, wasn't it? In the Death Star battle?
Yeah.
Yeah, she watched it last night when I was recording Superpowers. But, no, it was, I guess in this movie there are B-Wings flying around.
Right.
But there's not that many.
Right. No.
And the nice thing is, it goes back to Star Wars Rebels that's on Disney XD. Some of the stuff you're seeing that was in this movie, not just the references directly to Rebels, but there was some of the other stuff that was brought in there that if you didn't know, that they were introduced in Rebels. Mm-hmm. The Hammerhead Corvette.
Yeah.
Right.
That's actually part of the fleet in Rebels. But it was actually introduced in one of the games. I forget which one. But that's a ship out of Rebels. The Ghost, which is the main ship from Rebels, mm-hmm. is in three separate scenes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I noticed the first one. I didn't catch the other two. But you get when you get the top down view of the first outside landing pit, mm-hmm. you see the nose of the Ghost way off to the side. Mm-hmm. I was looking over, like, was that? Yes, it was. And I guess I didn't see it, but you can see Dash Rendar's ship there too, the Outrider. Okay. But it's probably not his ship, but it's that class.
They said the droid was in it, too.
Yeah, Chopper was in it also. I didn't see him.
He was just in the background in one scene.
The one that did catch that I was flipping out was when they're walking through the hangar at one point, you hear them call over the hangar for General Syndulla.
Yes.
Hera Syndulla is the commander of Phoenix Squadron in Rebels.
Yeah, they said it may be her. That's the stuff that I read.
There's two Syndullas. Either Hera or Cham Syndulla was her father. He was actually, he's the leader of the Rebels on Ryloth. Okay. Which is where the Twi'leks come from.
And they said they purposely did not want to put anyone from Rebels in the movie in terms of casting and stuff like that. They purposely didn't do that.
Yeah. Well, if they did, some of them, like Taylor Gray could have played Ezra. He looks close enough to the character. Freddie Prinze Jr., you could have made him look like Kanan.
Yeah.
But some of the other ones, it's like, it's a totally different look than
well,
the character.
Well, some of the ones who are aliens, they could have stuck them in. Mm-hmm. I mean, really.
That would have been awesome to see Zeb in the background somewhere.
They could have just
But I guess you do see Chopper, but that's because Lucasfilm and Droid Builders mm-hmm. have many a couple of choppers. There's choppers running around
right,
already.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it wasn't that hard to grab a chopper and put him in the background.
Exactly. Right.
But all of those little Easter eggs like that, that make it, are great, and we were talking about afterwards that the great best thing about those is it's if you saw it, you'd flip out and you'd, oh, this is awesome, you have a fanboy moment. If you didn't see it, it doesn't take anything away from it.
Exactly.
It still was a good, solid
I mean,
movie.
Those are, I mean, it happens with any, like, with the Marvel films and stuff like that. The Easter eggs are there for fan service, and that's mm-hmm. all, that's all you need. That's what, the fans want to see that.
That's the fan service you should have.
And, mm-hmm. like, for me, it was kind of like, I caught some of them, like, not having watched Rebels or anything, I don't catch those ones, but I caught some of the ones referencing other movies and that yeah. kind of thing, and, mm-hmm. like, but honestly, though, seeing C-3PO and R2-D2, to me, was stupid.
That one was...
They did
yeah,
nothing.
That was a little weird, but...
It's like, why didn't they tell us they were going? Shut up, you're not even necessary.
Yeah. Well, that also, they were there just because Bail Organa was on the planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're Bail's droids.
Right.
Well, technically, they work for Captain
Antilles.
It just
felt
but,
too
yeah.
obvious. It's like, here, we'll throw the Easter egg at you.
Wasn't necessary,
yeah.
but it was cool to see. Now, I would have liked it better if when we were on the Tantivy at the very end, they were crossing the hallway.
Yeah. I mean, just...
Or something.
Yeah, just something little like that.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But then again, Anthony Daniels wouldn't have known Anthony Daniels was in the suit.
Right.
He wants to get paid. He has to say a line.
That's right. Anthony Daniels has put enough into Star Wars over his career that he's earned the right to be able to say, hey, I want to say something.
That's right. Because
there's only a few times you've ever seen C-3PO on TV or in a movie or anything that he's not in the suit.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
There's only a couple of them. He's been C-3PO forever.
Yeah.
That was great to see. Let's get into the characters a little bit.
Okay.
What did you guys think of Jyn?
I like Jyn.
She was okay. She didn't have much depth. Like, it wasn't... Like, she just appeared there, and it's like, oh, she's all sentimental and sappy, and look, her dad dies, woohoo. And,
well, that's where something like when I read through Catalyst makes a bigger difference.
Yeah, but I mean, like, she, like, her the character herself, it was just kind of like, she was just there. Most of the characters, they were just there. They didn't have the depth, and you didn't end up caring about them. It was just kind of like.
Except for one, I'm going to get to him in a minute.
No, you didn't end up caring about any of them.
I did.
And then they try and make some little inkling near the end that, ooh, maybe she's falling for the guy when they're in that elevator, and ooh, they're holding hands on the beach when everything gets destroyed. Who cares? They didn't need
there are
any
a lot
kind
of, people,
of love interest, period.
But
there are
plenty of fans that do want to see that.
Yeah, but that it's kind of like the BS, just because she's female there has to be a love interest? No.
They would have done if
that was...
It would have done it if it was male and...
But it wasn't necessary
too,
to any part of the plot. Like, to throw it in there at the end,
no.
It wasn't necessary.
But it also
at
didn't
all.
Take anything away from it.
It kind of really. Did.
Because it basically it gave you that end of a war movie explosion moment where they see the explosion in the background with a couple.
Yeah,
it's a classic war movie trope.
And she has tears in her eyes. It's like, yeah.
That's a standard war movie thing, though.
Because I highly doubt she wanted to die.
Well, yeah, none of them wanted to die.
I mean, they didn't want to die, but it's kind of just like, let's get all sappy now. Like, well,
I thought the other guy was more sappier than her.
Yeah, right. I'm not saying he wasn't.
The one
I mean,
the gun?
Whole thing was sappy.
The one with the gun? The big guy?
Oh, my
oh,
God,
yeah.
Baze. The tank?
I loved Baze and Chirrut. They were an awesome duo together.
I'm sorry, but the whole the force is with me and all that BS, yeah. like... When he's walking through all these people shooting at him, they're just proving stormtroopers can't hit anything again. It has nothing to do with the force.
Well,
I don't know. He was taking out troopers with just a staff.
That's because he's done it yet.
Okay, we all know that any blind monk style character can take out anybody at any time.
I didn't realize the whole thing with him being blind was Donnie Yen's idea.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
Vicky was reading that this morning.
I mean,
about
it makes
that.
It a much more interesting character
yeah.
for sure.
And it also puts the little bit of question in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Is he feeling the force? Is he not feeling the force? Is he just listening and hear?
That's just it. I went with the whole almost like Daredevil thing. Like, if you've lost the sense, your hearing is heightened anyway, so he can hear every single movement around him.
Well, my headcanon had it more of, because these guys were guardians of the temple.
Right.
And in a lot of the legends and stuff, the guardians of the temple were not full Jedi.
Right.
No. But they were force sensitive.
Yeah.
So this guy could have been someone that was trained by the Jedi, because at his
it's
age
possible.
In this,
yeah.
he would have been young, but he would have been old enough to remember the Jedi and everything else.
Right.
Right.
That maybe he was force sensitive, he got some training, but he couldn't advance far enough.
Right.
His midichlorian count wasn't high enough or something.
Damn midichlorians.
Yes. So that's the way I looked at it, that he is feeling the Force. He can do this stuff, but he's not enough.
I mean, it is a question, for sure. It's
exactly.
A question. Yeah.
And then Baze was just fun the whole time. The guy with the big gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that gun was amazing.
Yeah. It was.
Vicky actually missed. She thought when he flipped it up into the rocket launcher, that was actually the same gun.
Oh,
but because it actually it looks very
similar.
It
looked similar.
The way he did it.
It did.
But that was awesome. And if you actually see any of the interviews with the guy who played Baze, he speaks very little English.
Oh, okay.
So his description of the character was, "I have big gun."
That works.
So there was a couple of things I thought of that while we were talking, and I didn't.
The robot stole the show, sorry.
That's the one I'm getting to. K2SO.
Yeah.
This was... I love this droid, because the droids in Star Wars, if it's an actual character, has personality. That's what it's supposed to be. But,
He's like the vocal version of Chopper.
Exactly. You guys haven't seen Rebels, but think of that personality somewhat, except more cantankerous in an R2-style droid.
He was a cross between C-3PO and Melvin from Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yes.
That he like half the time I was thinking Melvin when he said something.
Yeah.
And I was fine with him at first. He was very smart ass and funny, but then he just became an ass. Like it got annoying by halfway through the movie. I was like, just shut up. Just like, well, I didn't care. Yeah, just shut
zero
up.
Zero filter. Just,
exactly.
Yeah. And it got
they programmed everything else into him except for a filter for the mouth.
Yeah.
But I do like how randomly he's just shooting it, bopping people on the head. And in the last corridor where he's sitting there taking out stormtroopers left and right, not looking. That actually, the original model droid he is an Imperial security droid.
Right.
So that's the type of thing he's supposed to be doing anyway.
Yeah, because you saw him passing some of them when they were on the ship and everything.
Right.
And
one of them, yeah.
And one of the comedy moments in it that was great was one that was spoiled in the trailers, was the whole Jin is in the battle on Jeddah and shoots a security droid. Mm-hmm. And then as it drops, he looks up and goes, "You knew that wasn't me, right?" She's like, "Sure, we'll go with that."
Well, the one that's telling him to stay at the ship, and he didn't want to stay at the ship because he was bored.
Yeah.
That yes.
was good.
And he honestly never liked her. It's like, you know, I'm here to help you because he told me to.
He likes Cassian. He likes Cassian, and that's it.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if that's not programmed into him.
Because he programmed him.
Yeah. Well, another thing we get that we've never seen before in the Rebellion is you actually have... Cassian is the first true spy we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Because... He's the first gray character you're going to find in the Rebellion.
Yeah,
because Han Solo technically started off as gray, but he moved towards the light.
Right,
that's the way it works. And then he just kept getting better and better.
I mean, he was a smuggler. You can't start good.
Cassian was a true gray character.
He killed people.
In the very beginning, he shoots a guy in the back just to, so he doesn't talk.
Right.
Well, just so he can escape without him.
Exactly.
You know, you got to shut up, and he's got to go.
I think. Well, actually, he's the closest thing we've ever gotten to James Bond in Star Wars. The personality, or not the personality, but the way he treats the job and stuff, he is a true spy.
Yeah. A little more Jason Bourne, I'd say. Because of the rough street level kind of.
Yeah,
not quite refined. But yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like, if you're no longer of use and you might give something away, then you're dead.
But the nice thing is, that's one character we do see growth in.
Mm-hmm.
Because as the movie goes, he meets Jin. He's given, and the Rebellion gives him the job straight up that, you know what, as soon as you find Galen, kill him.
Yeah.
And it's not really the Rebellion, it's that one general.
Yeah.
Right.
You can tell that, and that's another thing you learn in this by talking to the Council, that the Rebellion is still pockets of resistance that have just, and it feels like they've just now got together.
Mm-hmm.
They don't feel like one cohesive unit.
That's true.
No.
Where in Return of the Jedi, they feel like one cohesive, this is the way
that's
it works.
Why, I mean, like when they meet and she's approaching them with this idea, they're like, no, it's not going to happen. You're not going to do that. And then they're like, well, screw you, we are.
And they do it anyway. Exactly. Well, that's one thing you get in Rebels by watching that.
Yeah.
Is that you see that in Rebels, this Phoenix Squadron is one small little fleet in a Rebellion that's a lot larger.
Well, I mean, there's a reason why they became Rebels. Like, you know, with the Empire leading everything and telling them what to do, now they've got a force within Rebels of leadership, and they're telling them what to do, and they're like, no, no, no.
Yeah, no, we've been doing this on
this
our own for how many years?
This has to be done, so we have to do this.
Exactly.
And they just totally ignore them. They're still rebels.
I think that was the thing that surprised me the most, was that the Rebellion leadership didn't want to go
for
the
plans. They wanted to play it safe.
They wanted to play it safe, because in my head, like, whenever I played this mission in my head, somehow they found out about these plans, and they tasked this small unit to go in after him. And you end up finding out that it was a completely black bag job in the first place.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool. Which makes it even more awesome.
This points out where the Senate is at. Because the Senate in the prequels, and then the Imperial Senate later, which they make a huge point in The New Hope, how it's not needed and it's obsolete and it can't do anything anyway. It's totally inept. But you see that because the rebellion is led by senators.
Right.
And these are people that are used to the bureaucracy and used to working through these things and talking it out. And the rebellion needs something more than that. They need action now.
Right.
Exactly. Well, and that's what this shows. In terms of senators, that Bail Organa showing up, like, that was a good cameo. Yeah. That was, no one really knew Jimmy Smits was in the movie.
No.
Like, they had never said anything about it. Well, I had heard
that he was going to be in it, but there was rumors. There was not anything.
And, but him showing, like, it actually fit. It wasn't one of those little, ooh, look, it's a cameo. It actually fit with why he was there and for the brief time he was there. And then went away. Like, his role was small, but it fit within everything.
Yeah. And, I don't remember her name off the top of my head, but the one that played Mon Mothma, she is a dead ringer for a younger version of Mon Mothma later. And actually, it's not the first time she's played it. If anybody saw the deleted scenes from Attack or Revenge of the Sith, they had a scene with Padme and Bail Organa and Mon Mothma and two or three other senators talking about how this is not going in the right direction. We have to do something about the Chancellor.
Right.
And you can see that's the start of a Rebel Council type deal. And it is the only one that's not in that meeting is Padme, because she died at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
Right.
So, but these are the same people, and they brought the same actress back to play her now.
Right.
Which is good, because it's 20 years later, and it's been 10, 15 years since they did Revenge of the Sith.
Right.
So it was a great way to bring that forward. And most Star Wars fans, if not other people, have seen that scene at least once. And know that scene exists, even though it didn't make it into the final cut of the film.
Right.
So, but you see, like you said, the rebellion is still a hodgepodge, mishmash of all these things. They've even by A New Hope, they're not really unified yet.
No.
I'm thinking even by Empire Strikes Back, they're not fully unified.
Not fully, no.
By the time you get to Jedi, I think that's why the fleet was so much bigger, is they've actually unified and said, you know what? This is a way to finish the war. They pulled in everybody from across the galaxy and said, this is the way we got to do this. So that's what, like she was saying, how this adds so much to the movie. Seeing this and then seeing A New Hope and seeing the way they acted in there, then it adds other levels that you didn't realize were actually there.
True.
Talking to the leadership. Trying to, what else was in there that, we're doing pretty good, but.
Yeah, they have the feeling of the first three.
Yes, that's another thing. There's a lot of original trilogy fanboys. One of the main ones is Paul Bateman. He worked with Ralph McQuarrie a lot. He's an artist from from England.
Okay.
And he was talking about how this is the first time he felt this, because he's he likes all the movies, but he's more of an original trilogy. He said this is the first thing he's seen that feels and looks like the original trilogy did.
Yeah.
Now this didn't have as much of the comedy, but it had it in there.
Had more of an urgency instead.
Yes, right. And that's also, the pacing in this film was a whole lot faster. But that's because it is a war movie.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, they had to keep it moving because, you know, you didn't need long explanations about what they were doing because you already knew.
Yes, right. People know Star Wars.
And it could just move beyond. Like, they're on this ship, they have to get to this place, they get to this place. This is what happens at this place. Like, it did have to keep moving, and they did it well that way.
That's something I've noticed.
It was a one-shot deal. They didn't have three movies to
exactly
go through and explain the beginning.
Yeah, this is also, the first Star Wars movie you've gotten that is a complete story.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's another quick
thing. This is, like she said, there's a beginning, a middle, end, and it's done.
And I mean, that's the point of these other movies they're doing. They're basically fill-in-the-blank movies. So that, you know, you've always heard about or played in your head how this goes, how they get the plans and everything like that. So this is exactly how they do it. It fits between two other movies, so you're just kind of like, it's just there. It has to end because the next movie starts.
Yes.
You know? So.
That, like I said, the sequel was put out in 1977.
Exactly.
The other one is interesting. They've never done it before in Star Wars, was the little names for the planets in the bottom corner of the screen when you go to a planet. All but one. You notice the one planet wasn't named.
Right.
but it's been done elsewhere. It was actually, that is Mustafar, the lava planet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
which is interesting that that's where Darth Vader decides to have his castle.
Well, Darth Vader's castle was actually designed to be in Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it was, and Ralph McQuarrie did the artwork, and I guess the castle in this is almost identical to the original concept idea.
Oh, and this. The eyes. Hmm? That was the one thing that we
Yes, well, I'll get to that in a minute, Darth Vader, the change in the helmet a little bit. That was a fan speculation a long time ago.
Right.
But the castle, what did you think of the castle? I think it fits cool. Darth Vader.
Yeah.
It was the first time we see the planet in daylight, too.
Yeah. Then Mustafar, it was like a daylight type
it just,
thing.
It just seems kind of odd. He had, like, the whole Anakin thing on the planet and everything, and then he's just like, oh yeah, I'll live here.
Well,
like,
it's just like the death and the birth at the same time.
Yeah.
But also, that's also a planet that, in other things, like in Rebels and things, they've had other things. The Emperor had, like, a, almost it would be like an orphanage for Force-sensitive kids there that he was stealing. And all these other, so that planet's been used by the Sith for many, many years.
Right.
And it, so it kind of makes sense that Vader would still be there also.
Well, it's been referred to as where Jedi go to die or something.
Yes.
Isn't it?
I mean, so. Well, that's where Vader was born
exactly.
And where Anakin died.
Exactly.
True.
That's true. But,
kind of part of the legend.
Mm-hmm. But it's also, it was the first time I think I've ever seen the Imperial Guard for Vader.
True.
Vader never has his own guard. If he does, the Stormtroopers.
That's right.
But there were the red cloaked guards there in the chamber in the back of the tank. And he also had his one of the an advisor, or one of the hooded advisor type guys that the Emperor has.
Right.
He had there with him too.
Which makes sense. I mean, it fleshed out a little bit about what people thought was wrong with Vader in other movies, where you didn't get the sense of his power. It's just kind of like, oh, he's just choking everyone.
Yeah.
You know, it was like this showed that he had the level of respect and power to have these guards and to have these other people involved, and it gave more, and just his role in general by the end of the film, it was like, finally, Vader gets to do something!
Yes.
And that is the one scene that everybody was loving, the one where he takes out the corridor full of rebels.
That was awesome!
People have been waiting to see Vader actually just let loose.
Yes.
And this here, he slaughtered, there's no way for them to do anything. He slaughters an entire battalion, basically, of rebel troops. But we got the answer for the trailer showed that weird tank, and you find it's actually a Bacta tank, and Vader's still, because in the books, a long time, they've talked about how, in Legends, how Vader would sit there, the chamber they showed in Empire Strikes Back was a meditation chamber, where he was actually still trying to heal himself.
Right.
Because he's constantly in pain.
Exactly.
Which actually makes sense for where he gets his anger and all this stuff. Uh-huh. He's always hurting.
Right.
Well, this shows that he's actually got Bacta tanks that he's sitting in for hours and hours trying to heal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which it never will happen, obviously.
Yeah.
No.
It makes you wonder, is the Emperor not tweaked something so that it can't heal him all the way?
That's true.
Because the Emperor has nothing to gain from Vader healing up.
Yeah, that's true.
So. But overall, I thought it was, I loved it.
Of course you did.
I didn't. I personally liked The Force Awakens
asking
better.
Asking a Star Wars fan how they liked the movie is kind of pointless, really. I mean, I loved it. Oh, really? I never thought you would.
But it's not just Star Wars fans that are saying this, too. There's a lot
of. That is true. A lot of people thought it was a good movie.
So, like I said, being different, I think, is going to bring in a lot more people.
But the interesting thing is, like, Star Wars fans or not, most people are agreeing that it was better than Force Awakens.
See, I like The Force Awakens better, but that's just, I like that story.
Right.
Right.
Well, so. In The Force Awakens, you're going to have two more that's going to be able to fill in the blanks. This one, like we said, is just a one-shot deal.
Yeah.
And because of the movement of it, because of the pacing of it and stuff, is why a lot of people liked it more than they like some of the trilogy movies, because there's so much more explanation involved in a lot of it, because they have three movies to fill it out.
It is an epic.
Right.
Yes.
It's like an epic poem. You got chapters of it. Which is the way Lucas originally designed it to be for those.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, The Force Awakens, I think what people are, a lot of people are seeing that they're liking this better, was this was didn't feel like the other movies.
Yeah.
The Force Awakens had a lot of the other movies in it. And they did, and we discussed that when we did our review.
Mm-hmm.
That it was almost like they had to take a step back to say, hey, this is where we're at.
Right.
So they can move forward. And, this is the first movie where we're moving forward into the new universe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is during what we've had before. But this is new ground.
Right.
So, and then the Han Solo story, from rumors and stuff, it looks like that's going to be a lot more comedy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more, maybe a little bit of heist film in there somewhere, more smuggling
type
stuff.
You got to find out how the Falcon changed hands.
Exactly.
That's gotta happen. Lando's in it and Han's in it. It's gotta happen.
Well, you know, their thing is they're too... There's two conflicting stories, so...
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
I don't know if I want to know that story,
but think
though.
About it, though. They could have two conflicting stories. They could, depending how they film the movie and how they play it off, they could each give their own version of the story.
Yeah.
And it still ends up with Han. Like that. And Glover has already said he's going to make sure his Lando is cool. Even a younger Lando is cool.
Hopefully he's sitting down talking to Billy Dee.
Yeah,
hopefully some of that cool can rub off on him.
You know what? Just being near Billy Dee Williams, that cool just oozes.
I want to see how early he starts wearing the cape. That's all I want to know. The cape has to be in the movie.
Yeah.
He's probably wearing it since birth.
Exactly.
He was born with a cape. He came out smooth.
That's right.
With a Colt 45 in his hand.
I'm telling you, if you ever get the opportunity to meet Billy Dee Williams...
He is smooth. He's the epitome of cool.
It just... Just
I mean, the day we met him, you could tell he was tired and he was still cool. Like he just was like,
I was just sitting there like, dude. I'm standing in front of freaking Billy Dee Williams. It was just
awesome. the character of Lando, how strong it is actually kind of cemented in place by the fact that how much has Billy Dee done in film and television and everything
exactly.
else,
right?
And there's two things he's known for. He's known for Lando Calrissian. Who had a handful of lines in two different movies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Lando was a relatively minor role in both those films.
Yeah.
Right.
A major part of the story, but a minor screen time.
Right.
And it's Colt 45 commercials.
That's right.
That's what he's known
That's
for.
That's really it. Yeah.
But then again, most of the films that he did in his history are like the blaxploitation films and that type of stuff that didn't have as wide an audience.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
As Star Wars is mainstream.
Right.
It always has been. That's just the way it worked. Everybody saw Star Wars, the original ones that came out. Everybody saw the prequels, no matter how much they like them or don't like them.
Right.
Everybody saw them.
Right.
So, but I don't know. Is there anything else you guys want to touch on before we get ready to wrap this up?
I think we covered kind of everything at this point.
Yeah, we spoiled everything out of it.
Although I expected Jen to walk up and kick the dude off of the tower, but...
Krennic? Yeah.
That's true.
That would have been actually right for her character, too, kind of.
Yeah. You know?
Kicked him off, but then I also expected him to shoot him in the back right there, too.
Right.
That would have fit in the movie also. Right. Yeah, when he brought up the blaster, which is going to shoot her, that would have made sense.
Well, no, so. Her and him walked away.
Yeah.
He got up and shot him.
Yeah.
So, I think all we got left is to bring out the brownie meter.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So, Vicky, why don't we start with you this time around? Out of 1 out of 5 brownies...
4.
Is it 4 out of 5? Okay. What do you got, Ms. Dawn?
3.5.
3.5?
Yep.
4.5.
I think I'm going to have to go with a 4.5, too. Because there's stuff that could have been better, but this was pretty close to the way it should be, no matter what.
Right.
And this, for me, makes it so that it says that, hey, Disney's figured out, or Lucasfilm knows how to do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They figured this out.
Yeah.
Yes.
Even without Lucas at the reins.
They know both what the fans want and what the non-Uber fans will still want to and want to see, like the more mainstream. They know how to get both of their audiences.
Mm-hmm. It's gotten to the point where, with Giacchino, we talked about this, the fanboy making the making the things he loves. J.J. Abrams, the fanboy, making the thing that he loves.
Right.
We've got to the point, we've said it before, the fans that grew up loving this, playing this, creating this in their minds since they were children, are now making it for everybody to see.
Right.
And so you know it's the people that know this in and out, up and down. They can close their eyes and just tell you the story they want to tell, and it's going to feel like Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Because they grew up on this.
Right.
And that's what we're getting. Now we got to wait another year.
Barely. I mean, if you think about how long you had to wait before you got 7, only having to wait a year for another Star Wars.
That's,
I mean, it's been
that's
3 years
thing
in
to
a
wrap
row.
Your,
that's you know,
thing.
It's every year.
Well, it's going to be weird after that, because Han Solo is scheduled for May of 2018.
That's true.
So you've only got 5 months between Episode 8 and Han Solo.
Yep.
That means we're going to have to wait like another decade for Avatar.
Yeah, because they keep bumping back those Avatar sequels because Star Wars keeps dropping in the wrong spot for him.
That's the way it looks.
Yeah, that's what it keeps looking like. So,
they did put out creepy baby pictures, though.
What?
Avatar.
Avatar does? I have not seen any of them. I don't know if I want to see those.
What, did you see that, the triplets?
Little blue babies?
No, I don't pay attention to Avatar stuff.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, little creepy 3, yeah.
Oh, the ones that actually have genitals when the ones from Avatar aren't supposed to have genitals. Those
what?
Are the ones. There's baby pictures. The baby dolls have genitals.
They're
that
all
not
like rubber looking and
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I see them, and they were moving the arm, and yeah. I'm like, that is just weird.
See, we never saw the first one, because I was like, oh, they're just Smurfs on a planet. Big deal. With a big message, and like, no, I'm not watching that.
Smurfs.
If nothing else, it was a beautiful film. They're
I don't watch
the scenery
films
and stuff,
for beauty.
Yeah, see, I like the cinematography and all that type of stuff.
It was so. James Cameron. I'm like, okay, Titanic sucked. I'm not watching his movies.
I've still never seen Titanic.
Good, don't.
You're the only person I've ever heard say that.
I hated it. I saw it and I hated it.
Because yeah. You're a guy. That's why you hated it. Because it's a love story and it sucked.
Well, it's supposed to be a love story. That's
yeah, exactly.
The way he wrote it. So.
No, I like
singles. There was room on the damn raft at the end. That's all I'm saying. Rose could have moved her ass over and he would have fit and not frozen in the water. That's all I'm saying. Everyone knows there was room.
Yeah, but he doesn't get the epic death then.
I like love stories. I saw singles. I like that.
We should do an episode about love stories.
I like some love stories. And some of them were considered chick flicks. Like
Dracula was a fantastic love story.
That's true.
Yeah. What is it? Ever After, or the one with Drew Barrymore in it, the Cinderella one. That one I liked.
Yeah, but it was Cinderella.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
So, but I think it's about time to wrap this up.
Yeah, I think so.
A solid 4.25 for this.
Yeah.
That's not bad. Remember the next time next week we're going to have the Weeby Awards show.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have our, then everybody come out January 2nd to the Malted Meeple. To hang out, talking about everything that happened this
celebrate
year and everything
new
going
year.
For next year. Exactly. We'll probably have, we could, either that week or the week after, we'll do our movie reviews for the next quarter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which actually, there for once, the first quarter has a lot of movies.
There are actually yeah. some to talk about. Yeah,
yes.
Fun.
So, Geeksters, remember, you can always find us at GeekWatch1.com. You find that, if you want to know anything GeekWatch1, that's where you're going to find it. All social media, we're GeekWatch1. Send us an email, geekwatch1@gmail.com. We're on the Tangibound Network and the Weeby Geeks Network. Mm-hmm. And other than that, anybody else have anything you want to put out there?
No.
So for Miss Vicky and for Miss Dawn and for Kylan and myself, just remember.
No matter where you go, there you are.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.